D. Orlando Ledbetter, one of our favorite guys in the industry. D. Orlando, great to speak with you again. Good to have you.
Likewise, Walt. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Always love speaking to you, D. Orlando. So, you know, let me start with this. Let me ask you a generic question, just about your feel, all right? I have not been very high on the Falcons in recent years. I'm feeling a little bit warm and fuzzy about this group, D. Orlando. I'm feeling a little bit better about this group. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think so. The optimism's pretty high, but then when you look at the fact that they're going to have 6 to 8 new starters on defense, it's like, why are we so excited about this team? But a lot of people are, and I kind of get it. Got offensive weapons. You got a new quarterback. You're going to probably score some points. So that's probably why most people are excited about this team so far.
Let me ask you about the tone that we've seen so far. We're only a few days in. I think you wrote something about this on Twitter. Maybe this concerned you. I seem to have read an exchange with somebody else that you were involved with. There's been a little extra energy to Orlando. Little boys will be boys kind of stuff. Maybe mixing it up a little. See, I think some of that is a good thing. Do you not agree with that?
Oh no, I concur wholeheartly.
Okay.
Yeah, there've been a couple dust ups there. Yeah. We haven't seen in a while at Flowery Bread. So James Pierce is bringing a little edge to that defense. The veteran lineman didn't like the fact that he was going so hard, and they had a couple rumbles with him on Sunday. And then Drake London had a couple drops that day, and the ball got punched out, and he had a drop on the ground. So we wrote about it, and then I tweeted, hey, Drake's dropping money on the ground. And then the next day in practice, he catches the ball in front of me and is like, hey, D-Led, report that S. So, everybody's a little feisty up there at Flowery Branch this early here at training camp.
Let's start with quarterback. I'm incredibly high on Michael Penix. I always have been. I picked the year that Washington went to the national championship game. I picked them to go to the national championship game before the season because of Penix and those receivers. And I've seen nothing but good things since. You know, draft night, obviously it caused a lot of consternation in Atlanta because he already signed Kirk Cousins to the $100 million deal, and the Falcons went with Penix at 8. Look, I don't know about the both of those moves together, but I still thought you had to make the Penix move, and I like all the returns thus far, D. How are you feeling about Michael Penix? I love him as a pure thrower of the football.
Yeah, I really like his deep passing. Yep. Also, at Washington, I saw 5 games that year and thought he was definitely a pro prospect. I don't know if he was supposed to go 8 or not, but hey, he did. They did a good job with him last year at the end. Was able to put up some points, and he hadn't practiced with these guys, so he's got a better rapport with them now, with Drake and Kyle Pitts. Maybe they can unlock Kyle Pitts now. We'll see. But I didn't buy the whole waiting for him to sit for 3 years deal. Because he's already 25, so you were gonna have him starting at 28, maybe play. He'd be 32 before his first contract, or 29 when his first contract up. So he's already thinking he's gonna have to play into his 30s. So him starting sooner than later, especially after Kirk got hurt and kind of hijacked the team by playing hurt last year. I was kind of ready to see them turn the page and move on to the 25-year-old Michael Penix.
Yeah, and obviously Cousins has never had a great arm, but after he was injured, he had the arm of a 4-year-old. I mean, what we were seeing was just horrific. I mean, it was just, he couldn't be out on the field, and he was. Now, to his credit, early in the season, he played pretty well. He had a 500-yard passing game, and he looked pretty good. Where is that situation right now, Orlando? The dynamic of that situation of still having Cousins on this roster, how is this story going to conclude?
Yeah, I think it's going to, it's two ways, two schools of thought here. One, he stays here as backup this year, and then when his numbers drop, most teams will have room to trade for him. The other one is, hey, people get through camp and don't really like their quarterback situation, and they say, we could fit $27 million under the cap. Then they make a trade for him, but he's got a no trade clause, so he's gonna get to dictate where he wants to go. So he's not just gonna go anywhere. Maybe he will go anywhere just to get out of here so he can start again. but it's not gonna be a good situation. I couldn't see them trading him to the Saints. That would be a suitor. I don't know what's going on in Cleveland, but they certainly don't have the money to fit him under the cap. When Justin Fields got hurt for the one day, people were already jumping the gun saying, hey, maybe they should get Cousins because they had the money. The Jets have the money to trade for him. But the scouts told us early on when this happened that his contract was untradeable. And unless some circumstances change, I got to figure that he's just going to have to hunker down and be the backup quarterback to Michael Penix for the 2025 season.
Yeah, because I'm just not sure there's anybody out there in the National Football League right now, unless they get really desperate, who would view Kirk Cousins as a potential starting quarterback anymore. I think we've seen enough to know that that ship has sailed. At least that's how I view it. Now, I will say this. The guy is incredibly accommodating in interviews. I see these interviews where people are asking him question after question, and he'll answer. He'll patiently answer every question. He gives you thoughtful, introspective answers on other players on the team. He seems like a good teammate. He seems like a guy, if he was more accepting of the backup quarterback role, would be an ideal fit in that situation.
Yeah, no doubt. He's been the consummate pro, and he's still helping out Penix. The people that saw the quarterback shows, when he got demoted, one of the first things he did was go out in the garage and call Penix.
Yeah.
And kind of started coaching him up right there from the beginning. But then he also, got a dark side of Kirk, when the cameras aren't on. he goes to Arthur Blank. He calls the owner, talks to him for 15 minutes, asking for the franchise to trade him and get him out of there. The owner just took notes and gave it to his football men and let the football guys make the decision. So, Curtis, he knows how to play the game and play the media and, show himself in a positive light, keep his value up. But, in New Orleans, after he went on TV and talked about his injury, he didn't want to talk to the real media. He just wanted to, get on there and make self-serving comments. So, I understand it, but it's a little bit more than the head of warming for the Kirk that comes on off in the press conference.
So Kirk Cousins is maybe not exactly what he frequently appears to be. In other words, this dark side. I get that. Kyle Pitts is a guy we've talked about many times. Since his rookie year, D'Orlando, there hasn't been a lot to like or cheer about with Kyle Pitts. So there's some sort of hope down there that Michael Penix can bring him back to life, eh?
Yeah, no doubt. It's his last year of his rookie deal. And, he's got to prove something. He had the big rookie year, hadn't done much since. They're not going to franchise tag him. That's $16 million. So he's basically playing for dollars this year. If I'm the Falcons, I try to get him off to a good start and maybe dump him at the trade deadline. If he's not worthy of the number four pick and, 4 years down the road, you can tell that Michael Parsons, Jamar Chase, Penny Sewell would have been better. All three of them and a couple other people would have been better picks at number four than Kyle Pitts, senior. Now he's had a kid and he's kind of maturing now. That's what they're hoping. He came in the league at 20. He's 24 now, and maybe he's grown up a little bit and can at least hold down his role as a tight end, run his routes better, play at a high level for a longer period of time. That's the Falcons' hope and dream for him.
God, he feels like he's 30 at this point. It's funny. When he was in college at Florida, he looked so dynamic and explosive and athletic, but I haven't seen any of that at the pro level. He doesn't he doesn't look nearly as explosive or athletic as he did collegially. And obviously, there are better athletes in the pro game. But look, this guy was supposed to be Brock Bowers way before Brock Bowers, and it just hasn't materialized other than that first season, as you said. Hey, dear Orlando, can you stay with us? We have to take a quick break.
Oh, sure, no doubt. I can stay with you, Paul.
Love it, love it. Dear Orlando Ledbetter, AJC, the man when it comes to the Falcons. We'll continue on the other side. Walt Deptula Road Rage, we are back, and we are privileged to be joined once again by Dear Orlando Ledbetter of the AJC and a million other places. Dear Orlando wears many hats, and among them, he covers the Atlanta Falcons. Dear Orlando, we're talking a little bit about the Falcons' offense. Let's talk about that offensive line, because, you know, this offensive line has some pieces. I mean, obviously, the Falcons are paying Lindstrom a gazillion dollars. But Nuzel has done a pretty good job at center, and I think they're pretty optimistic about him moving forward. You know, Cousins talked about the fact he has the ability to anchor and move laterally, which he doesn't see very often in centers. You still have Jake Matthews there. And the Falcons say they're very high on Caleb McGarry. Now, we've had conversations about McGarry in the past. I mean, he's a huge athletic dude. Pass pro has at times been an adventure, and he's now the guy charged with protecting the backside of Michael Penix.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, that's a tradition. Left side blind side tackle, but, you know, it's right for the lefties. And we saw back when Michael Vick was here, they switched the tackles. They moved Ty Winer over to right tackle and had Schaefer move from right to left. The Falcons don't plan to do that. They plan to leave Caleb McGarry there. And their rationing is the way they play out of the pistol and the shotgun is that they don't need to flip them because the quarterback is, you know, looking straight ahead and, you know, he kind of see. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me, but that's what they're telling us. You know, the blind side tackle is a bunch of hooey, and because we run the pistol and the shotgun. So they said if they were under center more, it would be an issue, but they don't plan on being under center much. And, you know I hate it when they get in the shotgun on 4th-and-1 or getting the goal line situation, need 1 or 2 yards, and they're in the shotgun. You know, you don't take the ball 6 yards back away from where you're trying to go forward, and, you know, just kind of overcomplicating the game. But, you know, he's a good run blocker, one of the best run blockers in the game, but he has struggled against elite speed. That was the book on him coming out of Washington, and it's been correct.
Yep, no question. Now, there's some other star power on this offense, dear Orlando. Obviously, the Falcons have one of the better backfields in the National Football League. I mean, Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier, these guys can both flat-out play. Those two guys are really tremendous football players. And Drake London is a tremendously versatile wide receiver who's pretty good in the run game as a blocker as well. So they have some weapons. Tell me about Darnell Mooney's injury and what that means to this offense, because he was the other guy that was instrumental last year, basically a 1,000-yard receiver. And it sounds like Atlanta's being a little coy about the exact nature of this injury.
Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, we kind of figure it's a grade 2 shoulder strain. If it was 3, it would be a little bit longer. We don't know if it's the same, you know, shoulder that he hurt last year that kept him out of the last game. So, they don't have to specify, you know, the shoulder. And I guess we can look and see which one's wrapped up. But we haven't, you know, we're taking them at their word that it's a shoulder and he'll be out a couple weeks. But they are, you know, highly, you know, optimistic about injuries. They don't, you know, give you the real low down dirty here in exhibition season. You know, they'll have to fill out their injury reports week 1, and they're not one of the teams that are forthcoming about injuries. They try to minimally comply with the rules, and that's gotten them in trouble in the past, quite frankly. You know, if the guy's out 4 to 6 weeks, just tell us 4 to 6 weeks. You know, we can call Dr. Chow or get on the phone You know, he'll look at the injury on TV and say, oh, yeah, that's 4-6. So we got to send him the film. But they won't let us talk to the doctors anymore. We used to just walk in the training room and get the list of injuries off the wall. But all these teams are being paranoid and top secret and then minimally compliant with the league rules on injury reporting.
Yeah, I think we do see more and more of that. The coaching industry, very paranoid as a chief characteristic. What about the rest of this receiver group, D? Beyond London and Mooney, you know, I've heard a few things about Nick Nash. Hodge is a guy who's been a special teams guy. You know, the Falcons have talked up Casey Washington a little, and we saw him a little bit. And then they did add DJ Chark, who has been a deep threat in his career. But I don't know, you know, he was retired, so I don't know what his situation is right now.
Yeah, no doubt he's in camp. He was working out with Easton Stick down in Dallas. He told him about him and thought he had something left in the tank. They certainly need some depth at that position because Ray McLeod is also in the mix there.
Yep.
But I don't think he's a one or a two. But he had a career 61 catches last year, so. Kurt certainly liked throwing to him. But I think Nick Nash got a shot. They got David Seals, went back to UCU,
yeah.
Went at West USC Virginia as a quarterback, and then ended up at West Virginia. And he's looked good. Kurt's been throwing to him a lot. If Kurt plays, he usually goes to him in practice. And the kid that watched to me is Chris Blair. He's a big kid that was on the practice squad last year with Penix. He was Penix's favorite target on the scout team last year, and you saw late in the season when Penix went up, Chris Blair went with him. So they like him. They like him. He can play. He can back up both spots. And he's big. He's gonna probably make the team this year.
All right. On the defensive side of the ball, long-standing problem: no pass rushers, and the Falcons decided to address that in a really strong way during the draft. They draft Jalen Walker. You know, it was I've heard from many sources that they tried to engineer a trade to move up to 7 with Carolina. I think it was 7 to get Walker. They weren't able to, and yet Walker wound up falling to them at 15. So sort of a coup there. And then they come back and sort of double down on that. People thought this price was too expensive with James Pierce Jr. But so far, dear Orlando, the returns on James Pierce Jr. seem to indicate he was worth the pick.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll see over time because we're going to watch that pod, that cluster that was there in the second round in the 40s because that's where they could have set. And yeah. Pierce probably wouldn't have been there, but Arezake went to Dallas around that time. And the other name, and I'm getting good reports out of Baltimore, is the Mike Green kid from Marshall who has 17 sacks. They said he's a beast.
He's a freak.
He's a good player. He has some baggage.
Yeah, that's
but,
it.
You know, so did Pierce. They got comfortable with Pierce. They could have did the same thing with Green.
Yeah. All I heard is this. I don't know. Maybe you heard something other than this. I heard that Atlanta had removed Green from their draft board and that they were just not even going to consider him. Obviously, Green had been accused. And we have no idea whether there was anything to this, but he had been accused of multiple rapes, and they were not. The Falcons have demonstrated, it seems to me, in the past, a desire to shy away from any of that kind of stuff, and they did. Now, I think he's a unbelievable footballer. I thought he might be the second best pass rusher after Abdul Carter in the draft. So, yeah, there may be a price to pay for that from a football standpoint. But you know, so far so good on Pierce. Tell me about Jalen Walker. Is something going on with him the last few days? Because I thought I saw a tweet from you saying that there was something cryptic about Jalen Walker in the last couple of days.
Yeah, he came out today and told us that it was a very minor hamstring injury. So, they're getting them minimizing the injury. You know, if it's so minor, why does he miss 3 days of practice? So that was, you know, it was more than a minor. You know, hamstrings can linger. You push them too fast, then, they could explode into something bigger. So I understand them being extra cautious with it. They got all that image into the day that it could see, you know, the stress on the hamstring and you know, when it's ready to go and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I understand why keeping him out. But then his position coach is like, man, he's losing reps. He's losing reps. He needs to be out here. So the medical people are winning for now, and they're going to try not to rush him back and blow the hamstring out.
How about Jesse Bates as a leader of this defense, dear Lando? I mean, Bates is a guy who's obviously played a lot of football. Again, Cousins really complimentary about Bates, basically said he's never spoken to any DB who knows as much about football as Jesse Bates does.
Yeah, no doubt. Jesse came over, you know, great film studier, you know, great ball hawk with the Bengals. He came here and, you know, added that, you know, to the defense. But since he's the best player over there, it's natural that he should be one of the leaders. So he's worked on speaking up and being more authoritative over there. And so, you know, when you first come to a team, you try to blend in. But yeah. Now it's year three. He's the best player on that side of the ball, you know, unless you want to say A.J. Terrell or Caden Ellis. But I would go with Jesse. And, you know, he's trying to lead that young bunch up, show them some direction on how to play big-time defense in the National Football League.
And then, you know, the other thing was this last draft. You know, again, people questioned some of it, but I actually liked the move, given this team had not had any real pass rushers in a while. I thought it was a big hole. So they doubled down on that, as we talked about with Pierce. And then, you know, later on they came back and got Xavier Watts and Billy Bowman. And both those guys look like they could be players in the future for Atlanta.
Yeah, no doubt. Xavier Watts, great career at Notre Dame. Jesse said he knows everything. He's, you know, well-studied. Like, now we got to see it on the field. And so we're seeing him share the safety spot with Jordan Fuller right now. I could see where Fuller might start the season out, and they work Xavier in over the course of the season, maybe even a big nickel package for him. But Bowman's going to get a shot at the nickelback competition. D. Alford's running first team now. But, I mean, they let D. Alford go and then re-signed him on the street after he had a really rough season last year with the completion percentage rate against him and the passer rating against him. You know, people could pick up those third downs. They just would look for D's guy and convert. You know, that was, you know, it was just a bad look for him. Tough kid, but, you know, they needed a little bit tighter coverage out of that spot. And Bowman and Clark Phillips III are getting a shot to dethrone D Alford at the nickelback spot.
Yeah, and as far as Watts is concerned, you know, I mean, I loved him at Notre Dame, and he can run, too. So I really like that pick. And I think the Falcons, I think the early returns, at least, on this last draft is that the Falcons might have nailed this draft. So I'm pretty optimistic overall, D. I'm more optimistic than I've been in recent years about the Falcons. There's a reason to watch, and obviously, as you know, that division is definitely attainable. I mean, you know, Tampa's probably the favorite, but you know, once you go past Tampa, you know, it's sort of a train wreck. So, I mean, how many wins this year, D? How many wins for the Falcons?
Yeah, I think 9 is the floor. You know, if everything comes together on the defensive side of the ball and, you know, Koo returns to his Pro Bowl form as a kicker, then you got a higher ceiling of 11, 12 wins there. You know, they're going to be able to score points. Now it's going to be, are they playing from the front and then able to play some defense and dictate some terms? I know that's the game plan, but we'll have to see if they can execute. It's going to be a rough start to the season, 4 or 5 games against playoff teams. But, you know, after that, everything is pretty manageable.
Yep, I picked them in the exact same range. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see. Either we're both going to be smart or we're both dumb. Either way. Dear Lando, a pleasure as always. I know you're doing a million things. Anything you want to promote?
We got our newsletter coming out on August the 7th. It's going to be called the Dirty Bird Dispatch. So you can subscribe and it's free. And it'll arrive in your emails every Thursday at 10 a.m. So be on the lookout for that. We'll be on social and on AJC.com promoting that leading up to next Thursday's debut before the Falcons play the Lions on the October on August the 8th.
Love it. Thank you, dear Lando, as always. Really appreciate your time. Very generous, and always enjoy speaking with you.
All right, Wop, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure coming on The Roar and talking with you.
There you go. The great D. Orlando Ledbetter. I love that guy. I'm on it. He's clever. He's funny. And he is insanely accommodating. I mean, he bends over backwards, and he doesn't have a reason to do it. He just does. He's just a good guy. Walt Tip Tulip Road Rage, quick break.